Chapter 1. Forget what you know about science. Forget what you know about religion. Forget whatever it is that you know of. Because what is true is far more incredible and menacingly disturbing than what we could possibly fathom. My name is Damien. I work with the science division of a clandestine organization called Protectorate. Goofy name, I know. But whoever was in charge of naming it clearly thought it sounded cool at first. Regardless, I'm here to tell you there's quite a bit about outer space that doesn't get around on Earth. Such as moon bases, space stations, fortress cities on Mars, and a natural wormhole by the former planet Pluto that's slowly expanding. This is something that I can't believe I'm writing about, but here it is. I had transferred to a space cruiser patrolling the Jupiter sector. The moon was cool and all, but I was getting tired of the horrible gravity and having to take those anti-atrophy pills every 12 hours. If you don't eat enough food, it gives you the mother of all stomach aches. At least the space cruisers have the capacity to create artificial gravity by spinning really fast. When I first saw a cruiser, I was surprised by how absolutely massive the structures were. They function as 10 rings that everyone typically lives and works in. They spin around a central stem, which can be used to travel in between the rings. More on that later. Luckily, I was not going to be surrounded by unfamiliar people. Judy was coming along with me, which gave me quite a bit of relaxation to adjust when someone like her backed me up when I got in trouble with blabbing my mouth to the newbies.
"Damien, you're still talking about confidential information,"
she crouched. I was with three other guys in the monitor room, telling them about how we recently had a friend who traveled back in time to save everyone's lives, and now he's mentally unstable.
"Judy, I won't let Shay be forgotten by this organization. He's literally the reason we're still alive, mind you."
She crossed her arms, leaning on her hip, and said,
"Yeah? And what would you do if one of the commanding officers came in and caught you yammering? I miss Shay too, but I respect the rules."
I gritted at her.
"And that's why you can't get that promotion. The organization wants daring individuals, like myself."
She stomped her foot on the metallic floor.
"You got demoted last year."
But I blew her off by saying,
"One step back, two steps forward. I'm certain I'll be promoted before you."
She raised an eyebrow and then held up a small, rectangular device.
"Not after I show the captain you've been disclosing information."
The other guys in the room started to chuckle, and I quickly got up from my seat, trying to tone down the tension.
"Hey, I wasn't trying to be too snobbish, Jude. Cut me some slack. Just wanted to show Shay some humor. Didn't he deserve that?"
She pursed her lips and lowered the device, slipping it into her pocket.
"I'm not going to be as nice next time,"
she warned, turning around and leaving. I left out an exacerbated sigh.
"Jeez, she's a handful."
One of the other guys, a blonde dude with a cracked front tooth, replied with a chuckle.
"She could say the same about you, but it seems like she's got a tight enough leash." "Oh, ha ha, very funny. But unlike you guys, she actually likes me. And she typically doesn't like anyone."
They looked around each other. I could tell they didn't believe me when I said that, but I knew it was true. Judy would always talk to me first whenever we were in the same room. I returned to my seat, but I took this time to nap, as usual. There was no reason for anyone to stare at the monitors when sensors were built into the vessel that warned you of anything getting within 3,000 miles of this cruiser. I don't know what I was dreaming about, something about the sun turning blue. Then I saw someone jumping me, and it was suddenly lights out. I have this dream almost constantly these days. But then, an abrupt alarm started to ring out, and I was taken out of my sleep. I looked at the monitors instinctively, my mind rushing into full alert. Looking around, I saw that there was nothing. A few of my comrades were sounding off.
"Monitor 1's clear,"
said one guy. A woman's voice said,
"Monitor 2, clear."
Another man.
"Monitor 3, clear,"
I shouted.
"Monitor 4, clear."
But then the words we knew would come up but didn't want to hear were finally uttered.
"I have a bogey on my screen."
It was Monitor 5 who had something to show us. I was able to peek over at the screen. It was another space cruiser, but there was something wrong with it. The midsection had been split down the middle, slicing the ship in half. It was a spinning wreckage, and hundreds of pieces of debris were flying out toward our ship. I knew this wouldn't be good. Despite these cruisers being reinforced with chromium, tungsten, titanium, Inconel, steel alloys, and magnesium alloys. These have been expertly manufactured and fitted together to make the ship virtually indestructible. But seeing that one of our own, a vessel constructed with the same material, was split in half, didn't exactly fill me with much hope. We were gathered on the bridge, and the captain looked at the large monitor displaying the wreckage. Pieces of shrapnel were bouncing off of the hull. Judy stood beside me, her eyes fixated on the destruction.
"By now," the captain said, "you've realized that one of our space exploration vessels has come to a tragic end."
No one said a word. No one was sure what to say. He continued.
"That being said, one thing needs to be brought to light. How is it an entire ship was able to be obliterated without us knowing? The answer is on board that ship."
Judy, as always, was the first one to ask the question.
"Sir, I know what you're referring to."
The captain was a wrinkled old man. His head was thin and balding, and he often had that no-nonsense British accent.
"Well, what might that be, Chief Scientist Marlow?" Judy answered.
"Well, I was curious about the ship thing. It doesn't make sense how one of our ships could have possibly been destroyed without us knowing until I checked frequencies. Their all-clear signal is still running."
A small smile cracked on his face. I couldn't help but give Judy a pat on the back.
"Nice," I said.
Her smirk was written across her face, giving her an ego stroke.
"Well, I'm glad to see that we still have people on board who aren't just panicking."
His eyes darted at a few of the crewmates that worked on the bridge with him. Looks like the rest of us missed out on some drama.
"Since Judy Marlow is such a competent crewmate, I'm ordering you to go with a small squad prepped to board the ship."
"But..."
she attempted to speak.
"As I said,
you'll be going on board to find out why the all-clear signal's still running."
She swallowed and then looked down at the floor. I held onto her hand, and she quickly looked over toward me. I gave her my most reassuring smile, and she almost looked like she was about to return one, but she returned to looking at the floor. We were dismissed, and I watched as Judy suited up in those new high-tech magnet-step spacesuits. Although they were a little bulky, they were surprisingly agile, and they came with magnetic clamps that you could turn on and off so that you could walk on the outside of the surface of ships. The red lens helmet retracted further around the head, allowing you an even wider field of vision. The glass was able to filter away radioactive particles and extreme light. Plus, it kept you warm. Seeing Judy so nervous about going out on a spacewalk got my blood boiling.
"I can't let this happen," I grunted.
Although I wasn't allowed to go, I snuck into the changing room, getting inside one of the suits myself, and quickly rushing over to the hangar doors about to open. But before I reached them, I made sure to give a friend on the bridge a quick call. When they saw me approaching, the guy in charge of the squad, a sergeant named Hector, held up his hand and said,
"Hey, where'd you come from?"
"Sorry, the captain wanted me to join last second."
"Did he? Let me confirm."
I could hear chatter on the frequencies, Hector said.
"We supposed to get another guy on our team?"
I waited awkwardly, glancing over at Judy, who looked stunned that I was standing there with her. Hector nodded to whatever he was being told and said,
"All right, come on."
It was five guys, then me and Judy, boarding a space skimmer, as they're called, due to them being capable of flying a group through the vacuum of space using bursts of air. The air inside the chamber was sucked out, and the hatch doors opened. Judy looked at me and started speaking, but was making no noise. Both she and I could read lips. She said,
"What are you doing here?"
I said, "Couldn't let you do this alone." She smiled warmly and replied,
"Thank you, Damien."
We grabbed hold of the handles on the skimmer, and with a burst of air, we were launched out into the vacuum. Our space cruiser was orbiting around the wreckage, and we would have about 2 hours to explore before returning to base. I'm going to have to be honest. I love outer space. I looked over and saw the massive planet of Jupiter, the shadow of its moons orbiting nearby, but we were much closer than them. The radiation levels must have been really high, but thankfully, these suits were capable of protecting us. After about 3 minutes of floating, we reached the wreckage and turned on the magnets in our boots. It would almost feel like we were walking normally, but the rest of our bodies still wanted to float, so it was a weird feeling. The mood quickly changed when I saw the dried-up remains of three crewmates floating around, their bodies mangled and burnt to a crisp.
"Dear God," I mouthed.
But then, static from the intercoms came to life. It was Hector talking.
Look alive, brainies. I don't need two scientists holding back my group.
Judy answered.
We won't. Right, Damien?
I was trembling inside my suit. Thankfully, no one could notice me, and I gave her a thumbs up to hide my discomfort. We went further in, shining our lights in every direction, only to be met by more death. The eyes of the crew were all staring back at us as they had been seeing something atrocious right before all the air was sucked out of their bodies.
Where's the signal, Miss Judy?
Hector asked. She reached into a sealed pocket and pulled out a tablet. She scanned through it and pressed a few buttons before pointing down some hallway. Every ship had a different design, so it was a tremendous task to find the desired room. We waited in that direction, confident that everything would be fine as long as we stuck together. Still, I had slight regrets about coming. There was no sound, and I felt like that's what really made this eerie.
Wait,
she said.
It's behind this door.
I held my breath as the squad wedged open the sealed doors. When they popped open, the five guys ran inside quickly, their guns drawn and sweeping the entire room. This was the monitor center. Judy and I went in after them, and she quickly checked all the equipment. I helped her, and we noticed that one of the computers was still online. It was sending the all-clear signal. Judy said to me,
"This isn't right."
"Yeah,"
I agreed. Hector walked over and asked,
"What's the problem here?"
I answered,
"The all-clear signal's still running, but it's the only one running, on a ship that's completely dead in the water."
I could see that the gears were turning in his head until he finally came to a conclusion.
"That don't make any sense. Who's keeping this one function on a ship alive?"
Judy said.
"Someone who doesn't want the rest of the fleet barreling down on them."
Suddenly, chatter erupted on the comms.
"Return to the ship!"
The captain's voice boomed. Hector was stunned for a moment, but quickly replied.
"Yes, sir."
Judy questioned.
"What's happening?"
"I don't know, but they want us to return to the ship now."
His face looked visibly frightened.
"But we don't know what it is that's keeping the all-clear signal on."
I informed him, but he wasn't hearing any of it. As we radioed all the others to form up and we exited the room, we had a little surprise waiting for us on the other side. When one of the soldiers took a look out first, he lowered his rifle and appeared to be confused. Hector called out,
"Dale, what is it?" "There's a little girl at the end of the hallway, sir."
Hector was angered by that response, pushing ahead and looking in the direction Dale was staring in. Then he cursed under his breath and said,
"What on earth?"
Judy and I pushed forward, needing to see what it was. It was just as he described. An alien child was sitting at the other end of the hallway, legs crisscrossed, and with six large, feathery wings lying flat on the ground. Her head was vaguely shaped between a human and a praying mantis. She had four bug-like eyes, no nose, and a small mouth. Her wings resembled that of an eagle, and her arms were thin with only four fingers. Her skin looked as smooth as porcelain, and her snow-white hair floated in the vacuum of space. We approached her cautiously, two soldiers aiming their rifles at her. Getting a better view, her skin was also solid white, but with tribal-shaped stripes that were a bluish color. And she had no clothes. Judy was the first to approach her, formally.
"Are you an alien?"
The little girl's eyes peered at her with curiosity, for we were all surprised when this alien could speak English to her. Her voice was soothing and calm.
"I'm not an alien."
We looked at each other, but Hector grunted.
"Whatever, we're taking her with us, because she might have information on what's happened here."
That was fine enough for me, because I highly doubted Judy would let this one slip away. She helped her to her feet, and I ran over, seeing that there was a bit of a struggle.
"How are you struggling? We're in outer space."
I hollered.
"I know, but she's actually heavy."
I also felt her weight when I wrapped my arms around the kid's back and legs. And it's not like a child's weight. She felt like she was 150 pounds, max. Hector ordered,
"Stop screwing around and get to the skimmer."
It was a struggle, but the kid wriggled out of our hands and walked around on the floor effortlessly. She was creating a gravitational pull towards any surface underneath her. At least that was my theory, but even I couldn't explain the science behind this because it's impossible. Artificial gravity is not feasible unless there's a modem, such as the space cruisers or just using magnetic boots. Rushing out towards the skimmer, a blue bolt of light flashed past us, followed by a painful grunting of someone in the back. Hector turned first, then Judy and I. The trooper in the far back had a large hole on the left side of his abdomen, completely cauterized through. He coughed a few times before falling slowly to the ground. Another soldier reached out to grab him, only for another blue flash to fire straight through his helmet, burning a hole through his head.
Contact!
The soldier's voice rang out, and more blue energy bolts started raining down. From the other end of the hallway, at least a dozen of other attackers were dressed in similar spacesuits as us. Why was our own attacking us? Questions that would soon get answered, unfortunately. Judy took the child and hid behind a corner hallway. I stayed next to Hector, seeing one of the plasma rifles lying on the ground. I wasn't going to cower in fear. That's not my style.
Damien, you're not a soldier. Take cover!
Hector tried to give me an order, but he would soon retract that statement after I managed to hit one of the attackers.
Never mind. Keep shooting!
He ordered with a slight smirk. I happily gave him one back as we both kept shooting at the others left and right. One down. Two down. Three and four. Abruptly, though, the rest of them retreated, and we were able to tend to our wounded. Rodney, the one shot through the abdomen, was quickly treated as the cauterized wound briefly provided him with some safety from the outside vacuum. Hector applied a sealant through the hole, saving his life. As for the other soldier, nothing could be done.
Why?
Hector's voice rang out. Judy came out with the child, trying to block the kid's eyes from seeing the dead soldier. One of the other surviving troops ran over to our dead attacker, but once she saw it, she took a few steps back, before rushing back to us with extreme haste.
You're not going to like what you see, sir,
she said, her chest heaving fast with panic, and her eyes were frantically looking around. Despite the orders to return to the ship, Hector wanted to see who it was. I did too, and I couldn't explain it. Inside the spacesuits was a pristine, white skeleton, but there was a yellow liquid that was floating out from the hole that had been left in its chest. I watched as the yellow bubbles floated in the vacuum and saw they could move. They were moving around, although not with any momentum to move in a direction.
What the? Damien, get away from that!
Hector shouted. It was too bad. If only I had something to catch it with. We quickly retreated, reaching the skimmer. We told the child to hold on to the handlebar, and when we launched, we could see that the cruiser was coming back around.
What is happening?
Judy asked. I had no answer for her. She was asked that question because a blue ring of light was forming around the cruiser as it was making its flyby.
Commander, are you seeing this?
Yes, General Scott. That's why we ordered you back to the ship. We've been detecting a strange gravitational anomaly coming from the surface of Jupiter.
I heard those words through the comms, and curiosity made me look down from the source of the blue ring. It was coming out of the great red spot.
You know, seeing footage of the sun obliterating the Earth was one thing, but I don't know how much more weirdness in our solar system I can take.
I remarked. Hector told everyone to prepare themselves. We were almost halfway towards the ship, but, as luck would have it, debris, moving rapidly, flung past us, smacking into the side of the skimmer and knocking a soldier and Judy off. I looked back, watching Judy spin uncontrollably into the vacuum.
Judy!
I shouted, removing my tether and throwing myself back with as much force as I could muster to reach her. I had only one thing in mind. I had to save her. I couldn't live with myself if I returned without her. She was my friend. My best friend. She was my only reason to be here. In the boundless expanse of the cosmos, weightless and untethered, we traversed through infinity. With my hand outstretched, every fiber of my being was consumed by an unwavering determination to reach her. As I drew closer, she caught sight of me, her eyes shimmering with anticipation and her hand instinctively reaching out, mirroring my longing. In the celestial dance, chaos unfurled its relentless grip on the remnants of the wrecked cruiser. In a climactic display, the wreckage succumbs to immense forces at play, catapulting into fragments of twisted metal. The cacophony of destruction remained silent through the cosmic void, not too far from our ethereal embrace. As the remnants of the disintegrating cruiser splintered apart, they morphed into deadly projectiles hurtling through the vastness of space. Shrapnel hurtled perilously close, threatening to disturb our delicate rendezvous. Our hands clasped firmly, and I was able to slow the spinning. I pulled myself closer, wrapping my arms around her, and our helmets bumped against each other.
Damien, you shouldn't have done that. Now we're both going to...
I don't care!
I shouted, her eyes widened.
What do you mean? Judy, you're the one who kept me in this organization. You're the one who's getting me out of trouble, and I know it's not just because I'm so gosh darn charming. You're an idiot. That's what you are.
She was on the verge of tears, but quickly wrapped her arms around me as we floated toward the planet Jupiter. Then she said,
I'm glad you're here, though.
Never before had I really, seriously considered what Judy meant to me. She was strong, but not indestructible. A facade that I always knew she was putting on, trying to prove herself. I don't blame her. She just tried harder than me. I went through life thinking it was not always essential to try your best, because it doesn't always mean you get the best outcome. But it means something that someone as nonchalant as I am could be someone she desperately needed in this moment. I briefly glanced over at the wreckage of the ship and saw someone. A hooded figure. His cloak was tattered, a mix of gold and black, and his eyes were glowing a purplish color. But I couldn't have seen his face. God, this was going to be annoying to die with this sort of knowledge and not have anyone else to tell. The ship exploded once more, and it was enough of a push to slow our descent toward the planet's surface. A flash of light came from behind us, and when I turned my head, I briefly caught glimpses of a streak of light leaving the skimmer, flying around directionless until it pointed in ours. Abruptly, I was jerked forward, and both Judy and I were in opposite arms of the winged child.
Whoa, kid, didn't expect this from you.
I laughed nervously. Judy kept screaming, clearly frightened by the sudden rescue. We were flown past the skimmer and landed outside on the ship's hull. We latched on, but the girl kept holding on to our hands.
Well, the captain's definitely going to be interested in our little helper,
Judy said breathlessly. I was also breathing heavily, surprised by these sudden turn of events. We quickly ran for the hatch to get back inside, but things would get worse now, because the ship was being pulled in at an even faster rate towards the planet's surface. I wondered if this rescue was all in vain, but we would have more surprises soon enough. Chapter 2. Once inside, the soldiers quickly surrounded us, rifles pointed particularly at our little flying friend. They were shouting orders to get down, and Judy and I quickly complied, with our hands up, but it was hard to get the alien girl to do the same. I knew she could understand what they were saying, but she didn't seem worried. They were getting more agitated and pressed in. Someone was bound to lose their nerve at the freakish stares that the girl would give. But another order rang out, telling everyone to stand down. It was Hector. He was waving his hands up, ordering them to lower their rifles. They obeyed. Judy was the first to get back up, pulling the little girl closer to her. Hector moved in, and I quickly got to my feet.
Thanks for the save, I said.
He shook his head, replying, Don't thank me yet. The captain's mad at you for sneaking on to this deployment.
Oh, I said. Well, shoot.
He raised an eyebrow, a little smirk on his face, and continued, Don't worry about it just yet, civilian. We're still being dragged down towards the planet's surface. I doubt there's any time to give you your reprimand. That was enough to make the cold sweat crawling over my skin to dry up as I became more relieved. But then I realized,
Wait, pulled down?
While the ship was still caught in some tractor beam, we put on a jacket around the alien girl and brought her down to the medical bay, where Judy wouldn't leave her. I was watching from behind the glass, Judy being the one to do the medical examination alongside one of the nurses. Hector slipped in beside me and said,
You got a thing for that woman?
I looked at him and thought about it for a moment.
Yeah, she's the only thing that keeps me going these days.
I remember a few years ago, someone went down with the moon base. Heard you guys were involved in that.
I don't know much about that. Something about the timeline changing. As if I know anything about that silly sci-fi malarkey.
I brushed it off.
You say that as we're in an interplanetary space cruiser, being dragged down to the surface of Jupiter by an unknown energy source that's been detected. And this is after finding a weird alien on one of our wrecked vessels. I gave him a pat on the back, and I said, "Seeing is believing." I walked away from him momentarily, but his voice echoed behind me. "Not everything can be seen, Damien." I was trying to figure out what to make of what he said. I glanced back over as Judy was checking the arm of the alien girl. I figured I'd check back in on them later. About an hour had passed, and we were getting dangerously close to the surface. Thankfully, these ships had the best heat-resistant metal capable of surviving thousands of degrees Fahrenheit. Still, the ship was plummeting faster as we got closer to the vortex of the giant red spot. I'd snuck onto the bridge, checked in with my friend to ensure he was all right and not in any serious trouble. Thankfully, no one had found out that he was the one who intercepted the comms and told them it was okay for me to go with that mission. I hovered over his control station, watching as he kept making sure that all systems were clear and checking with the different cameras outside to get a glimpse of what was happening.
"Lewis, you think I should ask out Judy?"
He turned his face to me. His look of disbelief was a little shocking. I was offended by that response. Then he said,
"Dude, we're literally going to crash into the planet Jupiter, and you're worried about your love life?"
The situation at hand hadn't hit me yet. I never really cared much for the bigger picture.
I guess you're right, but should I still ask her? Maybe before we all burn up?"
He rolled his eyes at me and said,
"We're not going to burn up with the ship. The captain has already ordered that the wormhole tunnel be activated."
That didn't narrow anything down, so I asked,
"For the ship or the crew?"
"Yes."
A sudden, relentless shaking overtook the ship, and the captain was barking orders left and right, needing to know what was happening.
"Are we able to activate the wormhole tunnel?" a random crewmate yelled.
"No, sir. The tractor beam coming from the Great Red Spot has disrupted our movement. We wouldn't be able to go through."
"Fine. The ship is lost. Inform the rest of the crew that we have to evacuate through the personnel wormhole tunnel." Everyone was forced to evacuate, heading toward the transportation center, a room with a fixed wormhole gate. It took up a lot of power, but considering that we couldn't even use the engines to move forward, we could leave it on as long as we wanted. When Lewis and I walked in, we saw Judy fighting with two soldiers. They were trying to get her to let go of the alien child.
"Get your hands off of her! She's supposed to come with me! She's a specimen! A rare scientific finding!"
I could read Judy like a book. There was no way that someone as compassionate as she usually was is only looking at this marvelous creature as a specimen. This girl saved our lives, and I'm confident Judy would go to no end to try and repay that.
"She's not deemed important. We need to get as much of our crew through that wormhole and not waste our time with aliens."
Judy was using her body as a shield. One of the soldiers was about to grab her by the hair until I stepped in.
"Hey, I suggest you don't do that."
He turns to me, puffing his chest up and having his rifle loaded and somewhat pointed in my direction. He spoke with his gruff, imposing voice to try and sound tough, and I have to admit, I was a little shaken.
"She's disobeying orders," he said sternly.
"Under whose authority?"
"Mine." The captain came up from behind me.
"Sir, with all due respect, let me take her with us,"
Judy pleaded, holding the child close to her. The captain crossed his arms and stood up straight, clearing his throat.
"She's not important. We need to evacuate only human personnel. We don't know how much time is left before the ship tears apart through the atmosphere."
"Then let's stop wasting time fighting about this and get her to come along with us,"
Judy snarked. I was rubbing my face due to the uncomfortableness of this situation. Judy was always one to try and have it her way, and most of the time she was right, but she was playing with fire in this case. I'm ready to back her up on this, but she's not tactful with negotiations.
"Listen here, either you release that creature or stay on the ship with her. It's your choice," he hissed.
Hector and the remainder of his squad, about two other guys, walked up to investigate the situation.
"Sir, out of respect, would it really inconvenience us to allow one more to pass through the gate?"
He raised his eyebrow at Hector, probably surprised to see him sticking up for us. He started walking towards Hector, forcing him to take steps back.
"Wormholes are expensive, Sergeant. Each time someone passes through that, the lifespan of the nuclear reactor shortens. With this many people going through at once, the ship's engines will probably give out quite soon. And who's to say letting that one person through won't result in you being left behind? Are you willing to risk that?"
Hector swallowed, but right as the scientist passed through, there was a sudden, eerie, bending sound of metal. Lewis was the first to speak, saying,
"Does anyone else hear that?"
There was a brief silence. 1 second, 2 seconds, 3 seconds. Then the ship buckled to the left, throwing us all off our feet and toward the side. Flashes and sparks of electricity exploded around the wormhole gate, and it began to flicker on and off until it shut off completely. Then all the lights went out, and there was a brief few seconds of pitch darkness and silence. I wanted to break the silence with a snide remark, but we wouldn't have much longer inside the chamber. The light from the wormhole flickered off permanently. This sent the captain and the remaining crew into a frenzy as they realized we were trapped. The emergency lights retracted the darkness, and an eerie red glow filled the room.
"Well, I guess we can only move forward from here," Lewis remarked.
The captain turned around, his face probably red. I couldn't tell due to the already present red lighting.
"Because of your lollygagging and constant rule-breaking, we're all trapped here."
He stomped his feet hard in my direction, and I took a few instinctive steps back, worried about what would happen next. Judy held on to the child. The captain slowed his pace until turning around to Hector and saying,
"Sergeant, execute these lawbreakers."
"But, sir..."
Hector hesitated. "That's against protocol. You're letting your feelings..." "That's in order."
The two soldiers behind Hector started raising their rifles, but Hector still hadn't. I moved in between Judy and the child and the gun in front of me, but my heart beat like a thunderous drum in my chest, and I stared down those barrels. When it looked like it was going to be the end, two scientists closest to the wormhole gate let out a piercing, sharp scream before instantly silencing out into a fleshy, splashing sound. Everyone turned around, and I kid you not, that robed man was standing in the middle of a pile of human blood and organs. He slowly lifted a foot up, the smearing sound of the red liquid sticking to his boots. And from his left arm, a long, curved blade similar to ancient Egyptian swords slid out.
Who are you?" the captain asked.
We couldn't see his face due to the encompassing hood that covered his head, but his voice came out like a snake, and he hissed,
"I'm here for the girl,"
and pointed in Judy's direction. Although I suspected it had to do with the alien girl, and not specifically her. When he took another step forward, the two soldiers opened fire, but the cloaked man kept walking, as if the bullets were never there. Hector watched in horror as two of his comrades' bodies got absolutely mulched in a mere second. I turned back and grabbed Judy's hand, yelling to Lewis and the captain to follow. When we ran to the door, 8 more heavily armored soldiers passed by, and in their hands were those fancy new armor-piercing, delayed-explosive bullet-carry rifles. Rushing down the hallway, we could hear the man behind us screaming in terror. Lewis was screaming,
"What is that?"
Judy and I both gave each other a look. We had seen that thing before, but I didn't think now was the time to explain, considering we didn't even know who he was. Due to the nature of the ship, it was built like this. A long stern section connected to 10 rings that spin around fast to give us the illusion of gravity. It wasn't spinning fast enough to match Earth's gravity, but it was close enough. That meant that we had to find one of the connection ports that led to the stem section of the ship and find our way into the ring situated on the stern of the vessel. I'd make a picture for you, but I'm not the best artist. When we came to one of the connection ports, this would be the part where gravity would fail us. The only way to get to the ship's stem was by ladder, which proved difficult when you're running for your life, and Judy had to carry the child this whole time. I suggested that she enter the room while I carried the child. Although hesitant at first, the noise of the screaming men had already subsided. The captain had already entered the room, and Lewis and I exchanged a look that expressed our doubts about his loyalty. My friend went in next, followed by Judy. I was about to enter when Hector surprised me from behind.
"Jesus, I thought you were dead,"
I gasped. The look on his face sent a chill through me. He looked absolutely petrified in his eyes, despite being a hardened soldier who had probably seen dozens of horrifying things in the past.
"Let's go."
He practically kicked me up the ladder. We were left with zero gravity when we got to the stem. Everyone was floating around, and the captain had a fearful expression when he saw Hector coming up from behind me. He asked,
Are you the only one left?
A few more soldiers may be on board, but I can't contact them. Radios are being jammed,
Lewis interrupted.
It's not safe to stay stationary here. Our choices are heading towards the bridge or heading to the far back of the ship's stern. Which will it be?
He looked around and saw that the stern was the best option to go with. If the unknown thing went towards the front, we would be exposed and couldn't hide. So we had to float straight to the stern for about 10 minutes. Judy quickly took the child off my back and told her,
"Hang on tightly, okay?"
The captain retook notice and started up the whole argument from earlier.
"Why are you still dragging around that disgusting alien?"
I'd had enough of this man's rudeness, not to mention his unprofessionalism and heartlessness. I was moving forward to set the matter straight, but Hector grabbed hold of my shirt and pulled me back.
"I got this," he said.
He moved in between Judy and the captain and said,
"Sir, with all due respect, stop impeding our escape, or I'm going to have to either abandon or incapacitate you."
The look of shock on the captain's face was absolutely priceless.
"What? I outrank you, Sergeant. You carry out my orders, not yours. And you're a threat. I don't care about the alien child, but she hasn't been a detriment since she's been here. You, on the other hand..."
The captain looked like he wanted to attack Hector, but even he was smart enough to know that he wouldn't last 5 seconds with a tall, bulky soldier. Once that inconvenience was settled, we floated toward the back of the ship, waiting to escape into the last ring in the stern. Using momentum, we would grab hold of the walls and launch ourselves through zero gravity, but slight friction in the air kept slowing us down, even if it took a while. But these space cruisers were absurdly long. Honestly, it's a good thing we started mining operations on all those asteroids and Mercury. Earth could not sustain the amount of space stations and cruisers we have all over the solar system. I happened to glance outside, and my heart jumped in my chest when I noticed that we were already passing through Jupiter's atmosphere.
Guys, that doesn't look good,"
I shouted. Everyone took a moment to stop and look through the windows. Everyone except for the alien child had the same fearful expression that I was feeling. It must be nice being ignorant.
"Dear God,"
Lewis muttered. The captain's panicked demeanor was unacceptable. As the leader in charge, he should have been better prepared to handle the situation and remain calm under pressure. Seeing him step back and frantically look around without taking control and providing direction was concerning. It's also the worst people who end up in charge. There was one problem, though. We were already entering the atmosphere, yet the ship was not developing heat. We were falling, although not at a tremendous speed, since we had been locked in a tractor beam that was pulling us toward the planet's surface at a rate of about 500 miles per hour.
"I wish we went through that wormhole,"
Lewis sighed. "I'm sorry, buddy. I didn't mean for..." He turned his back on me and floated away, saying,
"Of course not. Damien never means to do anything bad to others, right?"
I didn't have the words needed. Hector looked like he wanted to say something, but refrained. I wasn't sure what else I could do. If we were to crash on Jupiter, this would be our end. We had no escape, and there was that thing chasing after us. Judy had become quiet throughout this traversing through the ship, but when we finally reached the stern, we came to a ladder and began our climb, only backwards because, remember, we'll be pulled down by a gravitational force. We found ourselves in an empty room and set ourselves up. We were tired and still trying to wrap our heads around whatever that thing was that was trying to kill us. Judy helped the little girl settle on the bed, and the captain stayed with Lewis at the desk. Hector kept watch by the door, popping in occasionally to ensure we were all good. He kept trying to reach the other security team members on the radio in between. I crouched beside Judy as we tried to get the little alien girl to talk. I also was fascinated by her wings.
"Are you able to talk to us some more?"
So far, her lips would not move, and she looked back at us with those bug-like eyes.
"She's an alien. She doesn't know how to speak English,"
the captain rudely remarked. We ignored him and tried our best to get her to speak some more, but to no avail. Eventually, we gave up, and I walked over to the small glass window, now showing us nothing more than the orange and red clouds of Jupiter's great red spot. I leaned against the cramped space, Judy resting back against the opposite wall. We stood silent for a few seconds before she finally whispered to me,
"Damien?"
"Yeah."
"I..."
Her voice trailed off, and she looked like she had lost the words to say.
"I wish we had more time."
I crossed my arms and closed my eyes to take a deep breath.
"Me too."
She looked out the window again, as we watched the world slowly become consumed in light flashes, but otherwise orange darkness.
I'm scared,
she said, shocking me, because Judy never admits she's scared. Not to my knowledge, anyway. I am too. I extended my hand to her, and she trembled a little until I finally grabbed hold of it. I pulled her closer. We were practically a few inches from each other's faces now.
I wish we had more time, I said, a mix of regret and sadness in my voice.
She forced a smile and replied,
The past is a dead place, Damien. We can't worry about what we could have done back then. We're forced to move forward. So ask me now, since we've been putting it off for so long.
I wiped away the small tears that had trailed out from her, standing straight with her hands behind her back. This was the moment. I had to make a decision. I wish this would have been a more romantic setting instead of us plummeting to our doom.
I love you, Judy.
Met with a face that perked up with a huge smile, she poked my nose and said,
I know, Damien, because I've always loved you too.
She moved her hands to hold on to mine, and once they were interlocked, she pulled closer, standing up on her tippy toes, and gave me a kiss. After all this time, I'm glad this would be my final moment. Then, Hector interrupted the moment by warning the rest of us.
I think he's here.
The alien girl looked over to the door and back at us, her head tilted, and, to our surprise, said,
I'll protect Mom and Dad.
Judy and I looked at each other with confused expressions until we realized what she meant. Judy said,
Wait, does she think we're her parents?
But I'm not ready for kids,
I shouted.
The alien child jumped from the bed and rushed towards the door, her hand pressed against Hector's leg when he tried to block her, sending him flying into the wall on the other side. She ran out. Judy and I were shocked and attempted to catch her, but she was already in the hallway, her wings extended out, and she blew past us with a sudden speed like a sonic jet.
What do we do?
Judy looked at me. In all actuality, the real question was, what could we do? Clearly, this is something humans can't handle. Chapter 3. She was gone. Judy and I were worried. Judy more so than me, but obviously, I was going to side with her.
My God, that girl is strong,
groaned Hector, who was struggling to his feet. The captain and Lewis were looking on absent-mindedly as Judy ran out ahead of me, down the slightly curving corridor to chase after.
Judy, what are you doing?
I shouted, but she ignored me. I turned back to Hector, reaching out to hold him up better.
Hey, where's the security room? I know we have one.
For clarity, the researchers aren't allowed in that room, only the camera room for the outside of the ship, because it was part of our research. He looked at me, then at the captain. I could see the hesitation in his eyes, ready to force it out of him.
I can show you,
he relented, getting a hateful stare from the captain. Hector led me to the third ring to the stern, and we slipped into the security room without any problems. The camera system was still running, although a few of them looked to be destroyed. I checked around and saw that Judy was floating through the stem section of the ship. I had no idea where she was going, so I got on the intercom.
Judy!
She grabbed hold of the wall and looked left and right in confusion.
Judy, come to the security room in the third ring from the back of the ship.
She looked around a few more times until her eyes glanced at the camera. She smiled and gave a soft nod before going back. Hector looked at other cameras and noticed that the cloaked intruder was in the fifth ring, already wiping out the last resistance. Then, a flashing glow appeared in front of him, and the six gigantic wings spread out to slow the approach of the alien child.
There's that alien girl,
he said. I took my eyes off Judy and focused entirely on what Hector was watching. The two stared each other down, and after a brief pause, the alien child said,
I won't let you kill any more humans.
The cloaked figure chuckled, and his hands slowly lifted up to pull back the hood, detaching his cloak from his body completely to reveal something. I wish I had a trash can ready, because I immediately wanted to vomit. Underneath those robes stood a 7-foot, blackened humanoid, with a layer of sparkles over its skin, like someone threw glitter all over his body. Speaking of the body, it was jacked. I mean, he had to be taking steroids to look that muscular. He had a human skull for a head, with strands of flesh holding it to the neck and lower jaw, which was all flesh. His arms were throbbing with veins dancing over his ginormous muscles, and his fingers stretched out like long knives for fingers. He finally finished showing off, and replied with a hazy, echoing voice.
Child, I can't allow you to escape. My master demands you come quietly with me.
The alien girl readied herself in a battle stance, and even more shockingly, a second pair of arms sprouted from underneath her first pair, and her legs began to tense up, revealing stronger muscles underneath than initially believed.
Until I punish you for your crimes, Kato Carrion.
She created two swords, grabbed hold of them, and charged forward, ready to strike. Her opponent wielded twin Kanabu, a fearsome weapon he easily handled despite its size. She launched a fierce attack, but he deftly blocked her strikes with his massive weapons, forcing her to back up.
These alpha-level humans are pathetic,
he said sternly.
Why are you risking your life for them? They're nothing compared to the higher classifications.
They clashed again, and the child threw one of her blades through his abdomen, but he blocked it, briefly forgetting about her other arm, and had to readjust, as she was throwing another blade toward his head. Within a split second, barely an inch from his skull, he stopped the blade before it could penetrate, but felt the intense pressure of her two free hands punching him repeatedly in the midsection of his body.
I don't have time to deal with your temper tantrums, you proto-angel. I'm not returning empty-handed.
She crossed her blades with a blazing fierceness in her eyes.
And I'm going to be playing kickball with that skull of yours when I'm done.
He licked his lower lip, although it's hard to tell if he was smiling, considering that the whole top half of his head was a skull. The door behind Hector and I opened, and Judy came running in. I pointed out to the cameras that showed where the fight was happening. There was a rapid movement of wings and flashing swords, so it was a little hard for us to see much, except for the constant swinging of those cannibals. But the intruder pushed her back. She could land a few punches on his torso, which only aggravated him more when he snapped his fingers unexpectedly. And from behind her, two spacesuits filled with that yellow liquid and a skeleton morphed out of the floor. She was aggravated that he would pull such a sneaky tactic and had to readjust her attention, quickly cutting them down. They were no match for something as extraordinary as her, but this only served as a distraction, giving the intruder time to deliver a powerful kick to her head, sending her flying down the hallway. She quickly got back up, with only a second to avoid his cannibal crashing down on top of her. She rolled to her left and jumped forward to throw both blades toward his head, briefly forcing him into a defensive position. Her blades resume expertly precise swings to try and break through his defenses, trying to find a weak spot. Finally, she got a good swing in and sliced part of his thigh. He grunted and must have lost his temper briefly because he swung that bat-shaped object into her abdomen and smashed her against the wall, denting it pretty badly and causing it to rupture, pulling her out into the harsh Jupiter atmosphere. The entire ring was starting to tear apart because of the hull breach. I looked at Judy. She appeared to be having a panic attack. I had to ask her because this was getting weird to me.
Judy, why do you care so much for this child? I mean, I do too, but you're having a way worse reaction than me.
She steadied her breathing for a few moments, clasping at her chest before she could get the words out.
I can't really explain it. It's just that something within me feels a compulsion to care an awful lot about that child. Like a motherly instinct was turned on. I think I may have caught something from her.
Hector interrupted sarcastically.
Yeah, it's called parental love. Lots of creatures on Earth tend to do that.
I shot him a look for him to be quiet and returned to her, cupping my hands around her cheeks.
Breathe, Judy. Just think rationally right now. You can't let emotions dictate your life.
She looked at me with utter shock. My words were the one thing she never expected me to say. A guy like me who goes through life with a nonchalant, never-think-things-through kind of attitude is telling her to keep her rational thinking.
Thank you, Damien.
She slowly cracked a smile and wrapped her arms around me, kissing me on the neck as she buried herself. I looked over at Hector, and he rolled his eyes. The moment was interrupted when there was a loud, creaking sound. The sound of metal twisting and breaking echoed through the ship.
Well, I certainly hope we're not gonna tear apart now,
Hector remarked, lifting up his rifle. I got Judy back to her feet, and once she could stand properly, I told her we needed to find something to help our new daughter. She started thinking about something until she finally had a light bulb moment.
The weapons lab. We've been experimenting with our technology and taking some elements from the Nexus Gate technology to have a cannon.
A Nexus Gate? What's that?
No time to explain. We have to get that weapon quick if we want to stop the intruder.
The weapons lab would be located in the ring next to the current one we were in, so traversing it was a little complicated, especially when we got into said ring and were interrupted. Hector was leading the front, and we were getting close to the lab when a bright flash exploded past his head. We ducked down into an open room as plasma fire shot past us.
Who's shooting at us?
Judy asked. Hector fiddled with his rifle for a moment before firing off aimlessly down the hall. This allowed him to see who it was.
It's more of those puppet astronauts. I gotta break the seals on their helmets.
I remained quiet and looked around. I saw a vent and knew all ducts were connected within this ring section. I told the other two about my plan, and Hector replied,
I'm too big. You two, go.
Judy almost looked like she didn't want to abandon him, but did as he said, and we ripped open the screen, her being the first one to climb in. I had no qualms about that. I got the best view. We took a few turns until we made it to the lab. We thought it was safe, but when Judy pulled me forward to help me out, we heard the heavy footsteps of something moving around in the room with us. She and I looked up from over a table and saw one of those puppets near the exit. I didn't want to say undead, because I'm confident that yellow liquid controls the suit and not necessarily the skeleton. Puppeted astronauts. Hector had it right. We kept low, slowly crawling toward a sealed-off section with metallic walls. There was a door, and it needed a passcode to open. Thankfully, Judy knows everything about this station, while I was more focused on telling my stories during lunch hour. She typed in the code, and the door opened. But this alerted the astronaut. They thundered toward us, and Judy and I slipped in fast, sealing the entrance. There were a few loud bangs, and we thought that nothing worse would happen until the metal started creaking and bending with each smash.
Well, where's your weapon, babe?
I half panicked. She started rummaging through a series of different rifles and other experimental weapons. I had my eye trained on a weapon that resembled almost a sword, but it had a barrel running from inside the blade out the top. A sword that's also a gun.
I think we put it in the back because it was too dangerous at the moment. Might still have a few kinks,
she said, panic rising in her voice. The metal door was creaking more until, finally, part of it broke off from the post. Long, metallic arms stretched out through the hole, trying to grab hold of me, as there wasn't a lot of room between the door and the rotating conveyor belt of weapons coming out of the wall.
Any day now,
I shouted. She kept the conveyor belt spinning until it finally stopped, and she grabbed the weapon off the rack. It was a bulky, blocky kind of weapon with a massive barrel down the middle, and you had to basically hold it with two arms. I don't know if it would be called a cannon, but whatever kind of weapon it was, I knew it would pack a punch.
Is that it?
I asked.
Yeah, just gotta turn it on.
She fiddled with a few buttons, and the banging from the door got worse until it finally began peeling off the metallic frame that had been protecting us until now. She turned around and said,
Back off!
She fired a single shot into the astronaut's chest, and an increasingly bright glow expanded through its whole body. And then the astronaut's entire being exploded into thousands of shards of light, spreading all over the room until they evaporated into nothing.
Whoa, I shouted in amazement. That was incredible. What happened?
Her eyes were wide open, and she was breathing heavily.
I was so...
I reached forward and lowered the weapon in her hands. I gave her a look of reassurance. Then she took a few more deep breaths before handing the weapon off to me.
I'm not good at this stuff.
You did great, babe.
I gave her a kiss on the cheek and placed my hand on her shoulder, taking the cannon gun from her.
Let's go,
she ordered. When we came out of the lab, we saw that one of the astronauts was on the ground, the yellow liquid splashed all over. There were still two more, but I used the cannon to fire off two shots into their backs. And the same thing that happens to the astronaut in the lab happens to them. They exploded into shards of light and were gone instantly. Hector came out from his hiding spot and approached us.
Is that the weapon?
Judy nodded and began to explain what it was. According to her, it could rip open the energy of a Nexus gate to send anyone hit by the energy blasts out of our universe, effectively ridding us of all monsters. They were hoping to use this on monsters back on Earth, but it has issues of not working on every creature it's been tested on. Hector said,
"Well, that's enough science mumbo-jumbo for me, then. Let's go save that kid that you like so much."
I told Hector he didn't have to come with us, but to my surprise, he replied,
"To be honest, I'd rather go down fighting with a couple of brave scientists than a captain who wants to hide all the way in the back of the ship."
I gave him a smile and swung the weapon around. We had another stop to make. The hangar. Slipping into those spacesuits that we apparently leave everywhere, the doors opened, and the three of us looked out into the endless cloud layer of the planet Jupiter. Instantly, I knew it was hot, because anything that wasn't metal in the room immediately burst into flames. Hector informed us,
"Turn on those magnetic boots. We're gonna need them when the rig goes upside down."
Once they were switched on, we climbed out and walked onto the surface of the ring, excited to see the full view of Jupiter's surface. Because the gravity has to be to the floor, and the way the rings are spinning, you never get a good view out of any of the windows. Only the bow and the stern can give you a good view of everything. But now, we were on the outside, and it was amazing. Outside was a grand horizon of orange and red spinning at colossal speeds. Flashes of lightning and bone-chillingly loud thunder echoed through the storm. All we could hope for was that we didn't get rained on, because once that happens, we're dead. Because it would be helium laced with neon, enough to weaken the ship's integrity. When we got to a certain point in the ring, we saw that it was the ring over where the fight was still taking place. The alien child was still swirling her swords at the intruder, but more of those astronauts kept morphing out of the ground around her, preventing her from bringing down this Goliath-level threat.
"We gotta get over there, fast,"
Hector said. "It would take too long to climb off this ring, walk across the connection port, go across the stem, repeat the last two, and reach her on the other side." I looked over at Judy and Hector, and she happens to notice me.
"Damien, what are you..."
I couldn't help but give her a slight smirk before saying,
"Well, I don't think there's any other way, Judy."
The last thing I saw was her eyes widening as I took those first few steps forward, running with everything I had. Using the momentum of both the ship falling and my added speed, I thrusted myself over the edge, turning off the magnets with a voice command. I saw everything. The beautiful planet and all its titanic fury. The amazing grace of the alien child fighting on the other side. I was weightless, plummeting towards the other ring and using small jet propulsions to carry me further. Flashes of lightning illuminated the sky around me, and I felt so free for the moment. A few burning shards of metal flung past me.
"A little further, just like you, Shay,"
I told myself, aiming the cannon as I was coming in for my approach. The skull-headed monster knew something was wrong when the child took a look in my direction. He turned, dumbfounded that a human would be launching themselves toward him. I clicked the button, firing an extremely bright flash of energy that shot straight through his torso. I cheered initially as I saw his body explode with sparks of light, but I ended up crashing hard into the armored hull, feeling a loud crunch. I flipped around a few times, scratching onto the surface before nearly falling off of this ring as well. Commanding the propulsion system to activate, they gave me just enough time to stop my momentum, and I found myself hanging off the edge by the skin of my teeth.
Okay, I'm here,"
I shouted out due to the adrenaline rush. Before pulling myself up, I looked back and saw something cracking through the clouds from in front of the bow. There was a massive black orb whose surface looked like a vast plume of foam dancing.
"So that's what was pulling the ship in, and we're about to enter it,"
I said to myself. A little chatter exploded on my headset. I was getting chewed out by Judy's angry voice as she called me an idiot and said that if I don't die now, she'll kill me later. Hector began speaking Spanish, which I couldn't decipher because I failed that class in high school. Still, the tone of his voice was enough to say that he was both amazed and angered by my reckless decision-making skills.
"Calm down, guys. I shot him."
When I got up, I saw that he was still standing there, partially unharmed. There was a glowing hole in his chest, but it was slowly sealing back up.
Judy, I don't think Nexus gates are all that strong. He's still standing.
Angered by my interference, he snapped his fingers, and three more astronauts emerged from the hull. I held up the cannon to them, but there were a few sparks, and then the weapon broke into three pieces. They pulled up their rifles and began shooting at me, and I had to weave around as fast as I could to keep their aim off of me. Good thing those things were slow enough. The alien child kept fighting back at her assailant, and was getting frustrated with how long this had gone on, swinging his cannibos and smashing her face first into the ground. I thought I would be a goner, but then one of the astronauts' heads exploded open. I looked at the other ring and saw that Hector had set his rifle to sniper mode. I gave him the thumbs up and grabbed the astronaut's weapon, firing at the other two, and then pointing it at the intruder. A few plasma bullets dug themselves into his thick skin, which only irritated him.
Pathetic whelp. I don't have time for pests.
His speed was jaw-dropping. Turning his attention to me fully, he lunged forward, his fist raised high, and I just barely threw myself to the right as his fists crashed down right where I was just at.
All right, ugly. I get that you're mad because you're not able to look at yourself in the mirror, but you don't need to take it out on innocent alien children.
I mocked, noticing that I was buying her time as she got back to her feet, and then thrusted both her hands into each other, combining both of her swords into a larger one, with an even more fierce explosion of purple, crimson-red, and white energy flares.
I'm done with your kind.
He hissed, and he was almost about to get me, but he stopped mid-punch because of the shot from earlier that I gave him with the cannon. He grunted as he tried his best to close the hole even more so, but I could see from inside that tiny black arms were coming out and trying to pull in his body. I remarked with a slight smile on my face.
Guess that Nexus Gate technology is just a slow burner, eh?
The behemoth looked at me with what I'm guessing was an angry expression, still too hard to tell with that skull head.
You shot me with a Nexus Gate.
I took one look from behind and saw that the alien child was nearly complete as she spun the sword around in a circular motion, creating a whirlwind of blazing, unimaginably intense energy waves.
Yeah, ugly,
I said, dropping the weapon and running as fast as I could out of the line of fire. He tried his best to flick away the arms crawling out of his body, but he happened to take notice of the flashes coming from behind him.
No,
he screamed, watching as the child pulled her sword back from almost behind her head, her face glaring with malicious fury. Charging forward, she slashed him across his chest and abdomen, breaking through and causing the hole in the center of his body to tear open even further. Her movements were like lightning strikes, too fast at times for me to even keep up. 100 red glowing slashes appeared all over his body, and when he stumbled back from her last slash, she ducked down before shoving her fist just underneath his chin, sending a massive wave of light through his head. Pulling her sword above her own head, there was a climactic significant band of purple and crimson light spiraling upwards until, in a slow-motion fashion, split it right down the middle of his body, and sent a gigantic beam of power and heat striking past the space cruiser and at the black orb, causing it to rapidly shatter into a colossal flash of explosive energy. I covered my eyes due to the brightness, and when it finally died down, I saw a gigantic, expanding ball of white flames approaching us. The girl looked tired, but quickly rushed to me and found the weapon pieces. She fiddled with it and used her extraordinary abilities to repair the cannon. But she did more. She mounted it to her left arm and charged it up until it was glowing so bright that it almost overshadowed the cataclysmic wall of flames barreling toward us. Before I could get out another word, I felt something change around me. A ghastly shrieking surrounded me, and then there was a hard crashing thud, which, if it wasn't for the gravity boots, I would have fallen off to my doom. But the environment was different now. With one glance, I saw that we were surrounded by the tremendous expanse of stars.
Where are we?
I could barely get out. She dropped to her knees and said,
"We're far from the dangerous man."
I thought about what I would say next and asked her,
"Kit, I didn't want to say it before because it kind of goes against everything I support, but are you an angel?"
She looked at me with one eyebrow raised. Her actual response was more surprising.
"No, I'm not. I'm a subspecies of them, known as Elder Maidens. An all-female race that has plenty of their characteristics, but none of the divinity."
I chuckled a little bit. And here I wanted my worldview to be correct, only to find out it was for a bit, until she mentioned that angels are real. I don't know what to believe in anymore. She dropped to the ground, and I was shocked when I saw the weapon and her arm disintegrate into dust. I came to her side and pulled her close to keep her safe. Her face looked strained, and I knew she had to be in some immense pain. Quickly, we retreated back inside, and that's when I ran into the rest of the crew again. We weren't the only survivors. There were plenty of scientists, engineers, and a few of Hector's security buddies. Everyone was ordered by the captain to return to the bridge, where we would gather a little information to figure out where we were. The outside was freezing, and the planet's surface was dead, covered in craters and barely an atmosphere. "Well," the captain spoke to Lewis, who was hunched over on his computer. He typed in a few more, then his eyes widened from shock.
"Now, out with it," the captain ordered.
"I'm sorry to tell you this, sir, but it seems we've crash-landed on the planet Pluto."
Despite everyone's fear and confusion that we were trapped on the frozen body at the very back of the solar system, Judy still didn't seem to grasp the situation, and her OCD kicked in.
"Pluto's not a planet."
"I don't care!"
It's been roughly a month now, and we've been trapped here on Pluto, trying to get a signal back to Earth. Many of our communications have been destroyed, and Judy and I have been working on a little side project on creating a radio device while everyone else worries about being left behind. The captain still wants to throw the girl out, although I'm pretty sure doing such an action wouldn't affect her since she's unharmed by the elements. But Hector has always been by our side and has kept the captain in line since he's been more erratic. The idea that there are cosmic entities beyond our understanding lurking about and incredibly hostile makes me fear that humanity is on a thin line between survival and oblivion. But there is comfort in knowing that there are benevolent creatures that also fit in their category and are constantly waging war, making me feel a little insignificant in this vast, eternal expanse of the universe. But I have Judy beside me. She keeps me grounded. And with all the craziness and the uncertainty that we may never get rescued, I'd rather spend this time with her and our new adopted daughter. Worrying isn't going to solve the problem right now. In our case, it's best that we just don't think about it.
Thank you for listening and delving with me into the dark together.
Please remember to leave a thumbs up and subscribe if you feel so inclined. The more engagement this video gets, the more YouTube will push my content to others.
Thus, the following will grow.
All stories read in this channel will be available on Spotify, iTunes, and just about everywhere else. Links in the description.
Thank you for listening and feeding the cause. We'll be seeing you.